to greet the honourable members and the hardworking support staff. I would also like to greet our guests from the Department of Higher Education and Training. I acknowledge the presence of the acting DG and your delegation. Thank you for coming. Let me also, if there are members of the public who have joined us and need more rights, I would also like to welcome members of the public. I would like to thank all of you for showing interest in the work of this committee and the parliament as a whole. This is your parliament, and you are most welcome. The objective of this meeting is to discuss the performance of the Department of Higher Education and Training during the first quarter expenditure review of the 2018-19 financial year. This is in line with the mandate of the committee, which is to conduct senior monitoring of the national departments through Section 32 reports published by the National Treasury on a quarterly basis. This gives us an opportunity to determine the extent to which departments effectively and efficiently use their allocated resources to deliver quality services to make a much needed impact to the people of South Africa. I know that some of the departments that we have called to appear before us have sort of complained to say it's for the first time that they're called. And I then thought we have also take learning. Our intervention in terms of the Money Bill Act, whereby we look at and follow the expenditure after passing or adoption of the appropriations bill into a, each bill is promulgated into an act, we then follow the money using the National Treasury's quarterly report, financial quarterly report, Section 32 report. So this time, when we looked, we thought we needed to also come so that we can engage with the ministers. Judging us by good intention, if we work together, we should be able to achieve the objective of this meeting. Thank you. Let us have a constructive and an honest engagement in order to resolve some of the challenges faced by our university students and the society as a whole. Thank you very much. We will now move on to item number 2, which is apologies.
Good morning, Chairperson, honourable members and guests. We receive 4 apologies for today's meeting. The first one is from Michelle Kimang, the second one is from Ms. Manana, Mr. McLaughlin, and Mr. Bishop for the Astro. Thank you.
So Michelle Kimang is the first one
joining
but if we can help us so that we can take a informed decision on whether we accept the apology.
The written apology has no written check.
Manana?
There's also no written check.
And then the 2 others. Honourable members, we just received apologies. Do you accept the apology?
It's an email from the Shane.
Chair, but just we accept the apology of those who have given us written so that they are aware. But when there is no written, we will not accept.
Any second left? Thank you very much. So I would just make us the right, we now move on to item number 3. Welcome once more. I must say that I have been missing you. So I have to find a way of getting you a little bit of time again. Behind this is welcome. All right, shall we then move on? I request the acting chief to give the presentation by the Department of Higher Education and Training.
Thank you, Honourable Chair, and Honourable Members, and very good to be with we remember you well from our previous portfolio committee. Honourable Chair, I think I need to first give an apology for our DG, who is overseas at the moment, and that's why he has delegated me, and I'm going to go as acting DG. We can introduce yourself, whoever sees me from this side, please introduce yourself. We'll introduce the delegation as well. I just wanted to indicate the apology to the General Minister. My name is Diane Parker. I'm the formerly the DDG for University Education, and today I'm acting DDG representing the Minister and the DG. In our delegation, we have with us our CFO, Mr. Terence Trudeau, Mr. Tofi, who is from our DG office, Ms. Mbala, the DG for Skills Development, Ms. Mgida, who is our strategic planning head, Ms. Mtetu, who is from the HR section within our Connect, who is the head of our external audit committee. Mr. Victoria, who is our internal audit, but we've got Mr. Jabe, who is TBEG finance chief director, and Mr. Currency from our financial management section. So the delegation has quite a large delegation. You have requested that we bring people who could answer the questions on the various aspects of our presentation. And so what we have agreed to do is that I will present the presentation and then questions will be answered by the relevant people who have the detailed knowledge of each of these areas. So, Chair, with your permission, I would like to go to the presentation. So, Chair, we start with the introduction, which really just provides us with a little bit of context around the Department of Higher Education and Training. It has experienced substantial landscape changes over the years since it was established on the 1st of April 2010. The department was established from a transfer of higher education functions from the former Department of Education and skills functions from the former Department of Labour. From the 1st of April 2015, the department also became responsible for the technical vocational education training section, which were transferred from the provincial competence, as well as community education and training functions. I think this was a momentous time for the department because what it meant was an enormous increase in the number of staff that the department was directly responsible for. And there were also significant challenges linked to the funding of these sectors with the transfer of functions. There's also been a major impact on the allocation for NISPAC, universities and TLEC colleges, particularly in the last year after the presidential announcement in December 2017. So this presentation really focuses on areas requested by the committee in its letter. But it is important for us to provide you with a little bit of background in terms of our processes. We requested to look at the financial management area of under and over expenditure, including challenges and remedial measures. If we look at the drawings on the National Revenue Fund for the first quarter of 2018-19, that amounted to almost 7 billion. Total spending of the department amounted to 32.695 billion, which means that there was an underspending in the first quarter of 1.9 billion, or 5.8%. This underspending is across a number of programs, and we've highlighted exactly where it came from. The first one was due to delayed infrastructure and other earmarked grant transfers to universities amounting to 1.2 billion. And the reason for this was that for the infrastructure grant amounts that needed to go to universities, there had to be a detailed assessment of the plan coming from the institution, and then recommendations on what should be allocated for each institution. We had planned that this would have been completed and finalized in the first quarter, but unfortunately it was only finalized and approved in July 2018, and therefore the funds couldn't be transferred in the first quarter. Also, there were a few delayed institutional submissions of grant reports and audit certificates on some of the earmark grants. And as you know, and as part of our oversight, we have to ensure that institutions are utilizing the funding effectively, and we have to analyze those reports, check on the spending, and ensure that everything is in order before we would transfer the next tranches against those particular programs. And so this had delays. We are paying as soon as these issues are processed and verified and finalized. So this doesn't actually lead to any problems in terms of service delivery, but it does mean a delayed payment in terms of our quarterly targets. In terms of the other issue was delayed capital grant transfers for TLED colleges due to the design rollout of the TLED maintenance framework and training, which is 637 million. The design of the maintenance framework and rollout of training to TLED colleges took longer than anticipated due to these new allocations. Just to put this into context, Chair and Honourable Members, with the announcement of additional funding into higher education and training to fund the bursary scheme for new students, there was also an announcement for additional funding to TLED colleges, and particularly for infrastructure. TLED colleges had never had an earmarked infrastructure grant before this. And so this grant only really became available in April. It was a very short time to plan for the utilization of the funds. And perhaps one of the issues needs to be thought about is our the way in which we plan for spending given the challenges. But the remedial measures during the training and framework development have been completed. The first transfer was released on the 3rd of August, and the remaining transfers will be processed in terms of the approved training schedule. Then the next one is compensation for employees due to unfilled vacancies, and this was an amount of 97.3 million. And the major challenge here is on filling more vacancies, not taking place as planned. So salary increases implemented later than planned as well, which resulted in this In terms of remedial measures, processes are in place to fill vacant positions. This is an ongoing issue in terms of filling vacancies. Implementation of salary increases occurred in July 2018, and the projected savings will be considered for reprioritization in the adjusted estimate in consultation with National Treasury. The next one was in relation to underspending on goods and services, including equipment. A total amount of 52 million is indicated here. So this is related to the travel account processed later than projected due to inquiries and the travel agents awaiting invoices from suppliers. These are operating issues that resulted in the payments not happening in the first quarter. Various goods were delivered for which invoices were still outstanding. And so invoices are being followed up and processed as soon as they are clear. And that enables us to try and get on top of these expenditures. In terms of service delivery implications, the spending performance will not have any impact on service delivery and on the payments of targets. These were really delayed in payments rather than anything to do with lack of service delivery. For normal departmental operations, all payments are on track. The department is projecting an overspending on examination services, and this will be addressed through reprioritization of adjusted estimates. And with regard to transfer payments, all block grant subsidy payments to institutions and public entities are on schedule in terms of the approved payment schedule. The total transfer as of the 30th of June is reflected in the table. Now the table provides the transfer in terms of the universities, and you'll see there that it's 45.4% of the total. Now the reason why it's so high in the first quarter is that universities get an extra amount in the first quarter because they don't get it in the last bit. What is their first quarter of their academic year? And we transfer payments over a 10-month period rather than a 12-month period to universities. So public entities at 59.4% as a total. And you can see there that's broken down in terms of the National Student Financial Aid Scheme, the Council on Higher Education, the South African Qualifications Authority, and the Quality Council for Trades and Occupations. And for each of those, you will see that they have received a quarter of their funds for the year and are on track. Similarly with the HAYS project and the National Institute for Humanities and Social Sciences. TVET college subsidies have also been transferred on schedule, as has community education and planning subsidies and the public services sector. If we continue then to look at the issue of the economic effective and efficient utilization of funds, we can confirm that the department is committed to ensure that services are rendered in the most cost-effective and efficient manner. Cost containment measures, as communicated by the National Treasury, have been implemented across the board. Additional cost containment measures, including the limitations placed on purchasing of assets, were also implemented. Proactive alternative dispute resolution mechanisms are being implemented to reduce the cost of litigation, and consideration of sharing in transversal contracts has also been happening in that regard, and that's specifically in connection with National Treasury's processes. Alternative examination operating models are being explored as a possibility of reducing costs, particularly in relation to the huge amount of examinations that are currently done by the National Department for TVET. And this really has to be reviewed and is under review to look at how we might be able to deal with that issue. Some financial policies have been recommended to the Community Education and Training College, and that may also result in cost savings with regard to the oversight function of these colleges when it is implemented. We were here, as you requested, to look at the first quarter performance report for 2018-19, and it's just to indicate that we had a total of 110 targets in the APP for the year, and 75 of these are direct outputs of the department. Those are the issues that we have the direct control over in terms of our work that we do on a daily basis. And 35 relate to the performance of the PSET system. I think it's an important distinction to understand, because the PSET system itself is not in the daily control of the office. For example, institutions have enormous challenges and targets, and they are responsible for the registrations of students and for the teaching and learning that goes on, and therefore the output, the graduates of the institution. So while the targets may be set, controlling that they get to the exact number that's within the target is not really easy for the department. But we certainly monitor what is going on, and we report in terms of the monitoring of these outputs. The department has 21 milestones in the first quarter, which we met. The activities towards the attainment of annual targets, these are all activities towards the attainment of annual targets. The focus of the first quarter was mainly on oversight and reporting in the areas of institutional governance for the TVEC and CET colleges and CETAs, infrastructure maintenance at TVEC colleges, certification, backlog, eradication, academic performance of students at TVEC colleges, the conduct of TVEC college examination centres during national examination and assessment. We've broken down the various targets in terms of each programme. And if we look at programme 1, administration, there are 10 annual targets that are applicable to the programme in the financial year. And the areas of focus are identified here in terms of what the administration has identified as key areas. So the filling of funded posts, the management of disciplinary cases, ICT, payment of invoices, and management of audit findings. During 2017-18, there were a number of results that were reported. In terms of achievement, the alignment of the ICT strategy, which is connectivity of the TVEC colleges, the automation of business processes, and this is linked into creating an e-process for submission of workflow, e-forms, etc. The development of a new examination system and an e-recruitment system. In terms of those that were not achieved, in terms of disciplinary cases, being managed within a particular timeline, those were not all achieved. The filling of all advertised posts within a timeline, and the payment of creditors within 30 days. And some of the challenges around there are really challenges that can be understood. For example, in the filling of posts, we advertise posts, we're not able to attract the right people into those posts, and therefore they're not full. And in fact, I know in my particular branch, we have one which wasn't full in the house in the advertising because we have to go out and recruit them again. These are challenges that have been looked at to see how we can improve. In terms of Program 2, Plan, Policy and Strategy, there were no specific targets that were identified for the first quarter of this financial year. There are 11 targets in total for the 2018-19 financial year, and these focus on a number of areas. The Plan, Policy and Strategy branch is focusing on open learning within the PCL system, the recognition of prior learning, social inclusion across the PCL system, career development services, international relations, skills supply and demand, information management systems, and statistics on PCL. This branch supports the other core branches that are working directly with institutions across the PCL system, and so it does a number of cost-cutting issues that are linked into the work that we are doing. The planned milestones towards the preparation of annual reports in the following six areas have been completed in terms of the overall achievements for the quarter. So open learning and postal education and training, RPL, career development services, and so on. So all of these work is in progress in relation to the development of the annual report. In terms of program 3, university education, again, there were no specific targets in the first quarter of 2018-19. If we look at the targets that were not achieved in 2017-18, the one was the National Plan for Postal Education and Training. That is currently being finalized, and we do hope it will be published in the next year for implementation. It really was delayed due to all the processes around the Presidential Commission on Fees and also changes in the ministerial portfolio. That does result in decision making being delayed slightly in terms of some of the key issues that have to be considered. There's also a policy frame of collaboration between professional bodies, government departments, and policy councils that we have planned to put in place to improve the production of skilled professionals and paraprofessionals. This draft was developed, but it has not been approved by the end of the year. There have been delays in terms of getting the final policy framework in place. Unfortunately, the Chief Director who is responsible for that particular project has designed a list. That post has not yet been filled. In fact, it's been re-advertised now. And so that will get back on track when we have the right resources in place. In terms of Program 4, if we look at the first quarter, 9 oversight reports were due, and all of them were completed. You can see those oversight reports there. The issue of the certification backlog, which is a really important issue for us. Conduct of public TV college examination centres during the national examinations and assessments. Operationalization of the 3 newly built TV college campuses. The rollout of the remaining 9 TV college campuses. And implementation of a number of issues related to the TV system. In terms of Program 5, which is skills development, for the first quarter, 4 targets were planned. And if we look at this, the first one was implementation of the National Skills Development Strategy, and that was completed and signed off. In terms of targeting an average of 80 days to process qualifying trade test applications for trade testing, the actual ended up being 42 days, which is quite a lot lower than the 80 days that had been targeted. The plan development of the single national information management system for artists and investment is not completed, but it is well underway. And the business case for data load specification has been developed as a third step towards the system development process at hand. If we reflect on system performance in terms of quarterly monitoring, the national article of learning trade test pass rate, the target was 61%, the actual was only 57%. But there are a number of factors that impact on the pass rate. For example, most of the candidates may lack the requisite competency because NDELA is not a training provider, it's a testing centre. So individuals come to be tested, and when they're tested, that's when you can find out whether or not they meet the competency or not. So I think it's an important issue that what happens when they're tested, they get feedback in terms of the competency that they need to go and improve on. And then they can come back and be retested. So it's not the end of the world if they fail, but it is something that we have to look into in terms of how individuals are supported before they come to the test. The development of the AATTS will drastically improve the quality of alignment between training and trade testing, and it will enable the National Artisan Moderation Body to carry out the timely interventions in terms of performance quality assurance audits at all accredited training centres and test centres, especially those that are underperforming, and this should assist in improving these statistics over the longer term. in terms of Program 6, which is the Unity Education Planning, for the first quarter, one oversight report was due for completion. That was the report on CET College sector performance, and that was completed. The report focused on a number of different areas. The first one was around the education planning development within the sector, focusing on teaching, learning, and lecture development. Funding and financing in terms of the college sector, and then planning institutional development and support. And these issues around infrastructure and government assets are really important to monitor, because that will help us improve the system as we work forward. In terms of vacancies in the department and remedial action that we have in place, you will be aware that the department now has a post-establishment of almost 50,000 employees. This is after the transfer of the TA colleges and the ET sector into the Department of Higher Education and Training. And as of March 2018, the vacancy rate within the whole department was 6.5%. And by June 2018, the filling rate was at 94.8%. So it has improved a bit. But when we look at this target, it's a large number of people because of the size of the employees within the department. But in fact, it is quite well below the 10% target that is generally set in terms of vacancy rate. College principals have the delegation to fill their vacancies at salary levels from 2 to 8 and post levels 1 to 3. The Deputy Director General Corporate Services is delegated to approve appointments at salary levels 2 to 12 at the head office, and salary 9 to 12 at college. If we look at the vacancies in terms of the recruitment plan, the table shows you vacancies across all the varying sections that within the department. The total number of vacancies comes to 2,124, and the total cost of that for full annual salary is just over 780 million rand. I won't go through all those numbers in detail, but you can see that the TV colleges are the area where the largest numbers of vacancies reside, and that obviously makes sense because that's where we have the largest number of employees within the system. So if we look at the reasons for under expenditure on compensation of poor employees, well, firstly, because the vacancies have not all been filled as planned, and that is also due to a very high volume in terms of applications received. The second one is the internal capacity and human resource used to manage these huge volumes of applications, and the availability of panel members due to competing pressures. Now, I think this last one is something that tends to be looked into in terms of how we manage this issue, because members in head office are very strict. We have a small number of people who have to be sitting on all of these panels for thousands of vacancies, and that makes it extremely difficult to manage. In terms of remedial measures, standardized recruitment and selection processes for the entire department are being considered. Listing of vacancies, including those that are delegated to colleges in order to monitor progress effectively. Utilize public service regulation 8 to fill the vacancies. The recruitment plan in place to fill the 2,350 vacant posts by the end of the third quarter. And of those, the majority are in the college program, the external service provider appointed to process the application, and then the investigation of an e-recruitment system where individuals can apply online and then all the data can be uploaded directly from the application instead of having to have data captured from paper application. We were also requested to focus on NIRSAT and to provide an overview from their quarterly report. In terms of NIRSAT, the quarter one spending performance is shown in this particular slide. You'll see there that the department university fund, the budget for its 17 51.97% has been paid up already, and that's due to the need to get the upfront funds to the university and TVET, and also similarly in terms of TVET colleges to provide the upfront funds to TVET colleges. The National Skills Fund amount, the DDE Kunzile Shaka is shown there as well, the amounts that are managed in terms of the CETAs, the loan administration aspect, non-governmental department amounts that are being managed, and other government departments amounts. So you'll see as a total 48.33% of the funds have been transferred or spent either to institutions to manage or to individuals in terms of their agreements. So these upfront payments, particularly when it comes to universities and TVET colleges, included a fourth tranche payment made early in June 2018, and they approximate 50% of the allocation for each institution. But as you know, there have been major challenges at NIRSAT, and this was really linked to the data integration issues, and these still remain. The administrator is currently working on those to deal with them. But what the problems were related to this was because the data from this application, where individual students would have been assessed in terms of the mean test, were not matched to the data from institutions where we knew who was registered. Individual students were not linked up to their specific funding. Institutions have been taking the risk in the biggest part to pay individual students their allowances, but without having the remittance and knowing which student exactly is funded and not funded. So that's been a very difficult situation, and not all institutions have taken that risk. And that is the key issue that has to be solved in terms of benefit. I must say that we are happy to report that a huge amount of progress has been made in the last 2 weeks since the administrator has been in place. And there has been direct interaction with institutions, matching of registration data, and remittances are going out to all institutions at the moment to try and deal with this directly. And large numbers of students have been paid their allowances. NIRSAT had 16 performance targets in the first quarter, 10 targets, in the year, 10 targets are applicable to the first quarter. 60% of their 6 targets were achieved, and 40% were not achieved. And the ones that were not achieved, unfortunately, the two critical ones, were at the heart of the student-centered model and the failure of what has happened in terms of processes. So if we look at this, the percentage of students for which the first installment amount due to institution is paid to the institution in 30 days from the laptop assessment set, that is the target. And then the next one is the percentage of students for which the first installment of allowance is due to students, when this set versus directly to students is paid within 10 days of the laptop acceptance date, and the need to value assessment. So we're sitting with a situation where NSTAC was not able to perform key processes, and many of these were linked to deep problems with the student model and the importance to have the administrator in place to deal with these as soon as possible. Thank you very much.
Thank you so much, Acting DG, for the informative report. One of the members, today, your report that you asked from the department, I'm now going to ask you to reflect and interrogate the report. In our intervention, shall we be shocked and to the point? Over to the member.
Just a general issue. There's been a great concern about late payment of bursaries to students. How are we coping with that at all?
Thank you. Thank you for the question.
Perhaps if you could explain, I'm not sure whether I wanted to ask the number of the reasons that you are talking about. I'm not sure whether those are accounted for in the slide, much better form. I'm not sure whether you are talking about those reasons. So link that question to the slide, which is slide 18. And then that links to that, just explain to us how much in total is being budgeted for all of those areas. You need 4 and 18. And slide 5. I think to this one you're saying that the student performance does not have any impact on service. And when you spend on target, And when you have not spent, when you have other strength, it means that some targets are unlikely to have been met. So explain to us what you mean if you say it does not have an impact. And then it's like saying you are anticipating or spending on information. What informs that projection? And how much are you likely to overspend by in that projected overspending? I think this is my last chapter. I see you are talking about infrastructure in universities and different colleges. It would interest us if you could specify what infrastructure is talking about. We know that there are challenges in terms of student accommodation. And then link that, those specifics, to the cost, the budget that you have put aside for student accommodation. You are also talking about maintenance as well, especially in student colleges. Link that to the budget. But Chair, I note that whilst you speak about infrastructure and maintenance of the school, you are talking about equipment as well. Not so much specified, but what interested in equipment in different colleges. Because that would suggest you are looking into, for instance, equipment in the workshops in Tibet community where students would do their practical work so that when they get out, they have a very good idea of what they are supposed to do in the world of work. What must it mean to have about that? And in the past 2-3 years, there's been an emphasis on ensuring that students should get out of their colleges ready to enter the labor force as fully skilled persons. And if that is lacking, equipment is lacking, you may have the most beautiful of buildings, but it won't help the students. So, tell us about that and the budget you're setting aside for. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Honourable Member.
Thank you very much.
Actually, my question would be, I see that there are issues around that. For instance, there is a design of a maintenance framework and rollout for them. It's the first time. I mean, Stephen College has been in existence for some time. Exactly what is the challenge around them? Because every time we talk about Stephen College, they actually have problems around them. And then on the second slide, number four, we dealing with the, I know you also had some, but I wasn't very clear about this travel account was processed later than projected. What does that mean? And because it says due to inquiries, blah, blah. If you can just speak to that one more time. Then on slide number five, where you can say it deliver implications of expenditure data, and what the table they, and according to what we can make, they have not had any impact on service delivery. And I would again speak for civil colleges, where you spend 20.2% in the first quarter. It has been across the board, including the student colleges, there's been no service delivery indication, negative indication. Then the other thing is, we have indicated here at the program one administration that you have 10 annual targets, and you've clearly put those achieved and those not achieved. Now, if it's 10 annual, and already they seven here and four have already been achieved. That's a bit of clarity there, because it says that 10 and the error of focus there, I think 5, and then those achieved, and then if you can just explain those, it looks like I wasn't really clear on them. I just want to say that on the
thank you, Chair. The government has foregrounded the importance of settling invoices within 30 days. What challenges is the department facing in this regard, and what are the immediate measures being taken to ensure that people are paid within 30 days where possible? Because quite a number of the service providers depend on them being paid within 30 days, more so with regard to small, medium enterprises. Thank you.
Professionalism, because the education is important, and it
committee executives, high professionals of the state, so that they can also trust you and you have this small working relationship with the institution. So we would like you to share with us your cash projection on the transfer so that we can use that to measure it.
then you say that the recruitment plan in place to fill 2,330 HIV positions. Us as into the program. There are plans that we have not dealt with what is on the program. So how are we going to manage this? Please can you tell us what is the balancing act here? What's the balancing act? There's a plan, but there's really a problem which is not taken care of. The new plan to recruit us doesn't happen. And then you say there's a large number of students that have been paid their allowance. With this one, it's another thing. With us, one figure, because we give us a clear picture of how are we turning or how are we coming in, plugging into this gap that is there. You say large, doesn't even have a clear picture of what is the problem. You say 70%, and then we will then maybe in the next quarter we expect that we will be 100%. But if you say large, we're not sure exactly what are we talking about. And you say figure for one large. They didn't give us a figure so we can have a clear picture of what is happening, because from where we are and everybody we are one. I think we will then hand over to you to respond to the issue. Thank you very much. Over to you. And also, if in your responses you could be straightforward, short, and to the point. And you'll have a job now?
Yes, just one or two more questions. So it's
shall we allow them to respond to the question? Then I'll give the session.
Thank you very much, Honourable Chair, Honourable Members. And thank you for the question. I think it's very helpful to focus our minds on the questions like this. Can I just indicate that I'm going to answer some of these, and then I'm going to hand over to the relevant officials to answer others. Perhaps I'll just start with the issue of LISTAT and the concern around late payments and bursaries and your question around what are the actual numbers. Honourable Chair, one of the reasons why the Minister made the decision to put an administrator in place at LISTAT was that we were unable to get credible numbers out of LISTAT in terms of exactly how many students had signed up, how many students were being dispersed in funds to. We knew that the large numbers were because the amount of funds had gone to institutions and institutions were managing it on the basis of which students they believed would meet the requirements. But that is the critical work that the administrator is doing at the moment. We are expecting to get a formal report from the administrator in terms of an update in relation to how far he has gone. I know that 2 days ago he had indicated that they had managed to get on top of a large amount of these data integration issues. He has sent managers to almost every institution to work hand in hand with the people at those institutions to deal with those issues, and that they had started or ensured that the disbursements were going to the students at the so-called SBAC institutions that are managed directly by LISTAT. So right now I cannot give you the exact numbers of students that have received disbursement or that have signed their form, but we should within the next week be able to give you an updated report in terms of exactly where we are, and we can send that to you as soon as we've received it. I'm going to ask Ms. Mpetu to talk to the questions around filling of the vacancy, but I think one of the things that we have to recognize with the department and go to some questions that were indicated there. We had a relatively small HR department
industry and large numbers of new staff that became the responsibility of that relatively small HR department. And this is one of the huge challenges that we are faced with. And some of the indicators there around how we are intending to deal with that problem has been indicated. The one specific one being around the e-recruitment program, which will really assist with this. But I don't think it would be fair to say that the applications are sitting on people's desks. That's not the case. They are being processed as soon as they are received. It's just that the volumes are not enormous. Imagine getting 50,000 applications, for example, in paper-based form, and then having to find ways in which those can be captured. So I would suspect we'll deal with that directly. But, and I think also the issue of the numbers. Remember, there are large numbers of staff. So when we talk about the almost 2,000 TVET College staff, that vacancies, it's across 50 colleges and 288 odd campuses that those staff are indicated. The total number of staff are around about 28,000. So you are looking at you've got to put it in terms of the relative size of the staff complement there in terms of the vacancies that are in place. It's not a case of concern. We know that not having staff is a major problem for service delivery. We have to have staff in place, and it is one of the areas where I suppose it is the funding, the total number of amount of funding hasn't affected service delivery. I suppose 97 million of it linked to the vacancies, and one would say that it's a service delivery issue because we've got these vacancies where we need people to do the work. But it's the other chances that we're being referred to, and I'll ask the CFO to take that one up in more detail. I think in relation to the issues about infrastructure, I think the process is all at once. 1.2 billion of the total amount of understanding was linked to earmark grants and to infrastructure for the university sector and infrastructure for the TVET sector. And why we said that doesn't affect service delivery is the process that is undergone in this. Chair, let me give you an example in terms of earmark grants. The infrastructure program is being planned for the next 3 years. So that was a plan in place. All institutions have to put in their plans. The plans have to be analysed. They have to be dealt with. We have the capacity to do that through our infrastructure program, and work was done. The delay was just in the signing off and approval of those things, and it was within a few days of the end of the quarter. But it hasn't affected the service delivery because all of the institutions already have their infrastructure programs in place. And in the university sector, they are all busy implementing the various infrastructure programs. So what if all infrastructure programs is across all institutions and across all types? It's across student housing, across academic buildings, laboratories, and so on. And in terms of equipment, when we get an infrastructure grant for a specific planned building, for example, it includes all the furnishings and all of the equipment that go in that building. Because the building itself is only operational once it has all of that equipment. So we're talking about student housing and the amount that goes to a specific student housing program. It will be the building of that, it will be the beds, it will be the stoves, it will be the seminars, it will be the entertainment, it will be everything that's included in that. And that's why I can't even don't understand why the cost per bed is so high, but because the total cost is divided by the number of beds in the particular facility. but that increases, absolutely increases, increase upon everything. In terms of the way in which this is managed in the university sector, there's approval for specific projects that are managed at the institution level. And the transfers go to the university in terms of the approved project. But as you know, one can't transfer the funds unless there's actually radical money and good spending at the institutional level. So the monitoring of what's going on becomes absolutely important. Now when we're talking about some of these other government funds, let me give you an example. Say for example the teaching development grant, which is given against a specific plan, and the institution has to provide a report on what they have done in relation to that plan which was approved, and including in that report has to be audit certificates to show that that funding has been effectively utilized for what was planned, and there has to be a guarantee that any interest on the funds that were not spent are earmarked so that they can be reallocated for that purpose. Now what happens is if an institution is late in submitting a report, that has an upon effect. And then the second thing is that sometimes the report, the questions they have to be asked about. Because we have to hold the institution accountable. And if we found that they haven't utilized the funds according to their plan and it's been approved, what we will do is we will request that they use other funds to help cover that amount, and we will withdraw that funding and then reallocate it to something else. And it's our way of holding institutions accountable for the funds that are made available. So the transfer of these grants is a little difficult in terms of getting the timing exactly right, because of this, that is an important thing between us, but it is our job to ensure that institutions are held accountable for the funds that we make available. We do not want to see institutions being given funds, say, for research development, and then using it for something else. If they use it for something else, we will withdraw it. And that is one of the challenges that we have. So when we say it doesn't have a service delivery implication, what we mean is that the funds will be transferred by the end of the year. They may be reallocated for more effective, for other areas that the institution isn't using them effectively. But they all have funds available to do projects which are approved. So it's not delaying the institution for funds implementing the projects that are in place. I think the cost containment issues will be taken up by the CFO. The issue of over expenditure on examination by Mr. Gillette. The litigation, one is being litigated against for in terms of the facts attached, and I think the CFO perhaps we could assist with that one. We've done the TVET colleges one. I think Chair, I've covered the ones that I would be dealing with. Can I please ask the CFO to deal with the issues that he needs to deal with? And then we'll move to Mr. Petrie and to Mr. Gervais to deal with the others.
Thank you, Dr. Parker, Honourable Chairperson, Honourable Members. I think just a few things. First of all, if one looks at the cost containment measures, I think it's also important just to explain or indicate that the department's actual operational cost is extremely limited. If one takes into account and we take off all our transfers, our compensation of employees, earmarked amounts which include aspects such as the rental of the building, the department for this financial year only has an operational cost of 379 million rand in total for everything that needs to be done within the department. And if we compare that to 2017-18, the amount was 366 million. So you can see that a very limited increase of only 11 million on all our operations. And this is mainly as a result of the fact that
as with all departments in government, National Treasury did apply budget cuts. So despite the fact that we received numerous additional allocations, those were for the student funding, for institutional funding, and for our operations, we actually received a budget cut. So we have a very limited operational budget with a budget cut, and although we cannot specifically quantify, we do have quite a number of measures in place. Firstly, to absorb the fact that we still have budget cuts on operational costs, and that in itself requires a lot of management to ensure that all our operations can proceed. One of our big areas of concerns, and that is also linked to one of the other questions, and our colleague from Tibet Bronze can just perhaps elaborate a bit more, is also that these operational costs include, for example, our examination system that we are managing. It includes the Mdlela Trade Center. So if one takes that into account, those two components close to absorb almost like 20% of that cost within the department already. Now if you look at the examinations specifically, we experienced for some years, not only as a result of the cost of printing and delivering of exams and the development thereof to the various institutions, but also the cost of examiners and moderators. Our examiners and moderators also, in terms of the public service bargaining agreements, receive salary increases or increases for their fees on an annual basis. And in most of the cases, that needs to be absorbed within the costs of the department. So for the past few years, we have been applying to National Treasury for increased funding, especially for examination services, because it is so costly. And last year, with the announcement of the 2018 NTS allocations, National Treasury did indicate that with effect from 1 April 2019, so from the 2019-20 financial year, next year, we will receive a baseline adjustment for examination services. So we trust and we definitely hope that this would be the last year in which we would experience these projected overspending on exams, as the baseline for exams will substantially increase from the next financial year. We do project at this point in time, taking into account actual expenditure to date, as well as if we consider the big November examination that's still lying ahead of us, and then also the repeat exams during February, that in total we may, including examiners and moderators, overspend by close to 150 million rand on examination services. And we are with Treasury looking at possible plans to deal with this within our baseline and to ensure that we do not need to request additional funding. That exercise is in process and it will be finalized before the adjusted estimates matters are tabled. See then, perhaps just to explain also, and I can understand that it is a concern and a question from the side of the committee, the issue of the travel accounts and why they are not clarified on time. Travel account is a very difficult one to manage, not only on our side, but also on the side of the travel agent. We book our services through the travel agent. The travel agent is then responsible on their side to finalize not only the bookings, but also from their side to make the payments and receive the invoices from the various service providers, which would then be whichever air flight company that we are using, whether it is SIA or British Airways, doesn't matter. In addition to that, the various hotels, the car rental companies, all of those are then consolidated and managed by the travel agent and paid by the travel agent. The travel agent only submits its invoices to us as soon as they have received everything from the various service providers. So our arrangement with the travel agent is then that they on a monthly basis issue to us their invoices based on what they could have received by that date, what they could have paid, including obviously their agency fee. And this is unfortunately a very slow process. It is a process that takes long. They sometimes receive final invoices and documentation from their service providers, their accounts, etc., after several months. On our side, we have those expenses that will come as a commitment in our books so that we are sure that we make provision for those invoices when they arrive. So in that respect, we are managing it from our side. It is a bit of a slow process. The other aspect is also, and that is something that we are also looking at, and I am going to ask Mr. Kearns from our supply chain unit just to give some perspective on that as well. But we are also looking at a possibility of, in one way or another, trying to systemize this whole process. Because one of the problems that we do experience is that when we receive the invoice from the travel agent, we must still verify and check all the documentation. We cannot just pay the invoice from the travel agent. We need to look at was those really services that we ordered, was it bookings that we made, can we sign off on all the documentation before we do a final payment. And that is also a mammoth task. We sit with some stages with up to 5 to 6 boxes full of documentation that have to be worked through on a month-to-month basis by the finance unit before they make a payment. So we deal with the matter very carefully, especially also because our financial cost for travel and accommodation is relatively high if one compares it with other departments. It is one of our major cost drivers in the sense that especially monitoring and evaluation to all the institutions must take place. Taking into account that within government we are certainly one of the departments with the largest number of institutions. We have the 26 universities with various campuses, the 50 Tibet colleges with various campuses, our 21 CETAs, and the 5 other public entities. And all of those need monitoring and evaluation. And that is a huge cost on the side of the department. In terms of 30-day payments, although the department is not at 100%, I must emphasize that if one look at the average in terms of the large number of payments that we do have, we are way below 30 days on average. However, if we look at our 30-day achievement, over the past few months, we have substantially improved. We even received a compliment from National Treasury as well as the presidency in that regard. And from July, I can report that we only had 12 payments, which is a 0.01% almost of the number of payments that we made that were not within 30 days. There are specific reasons for those. I can also report that we on a monthly basis look at each and every payment that was above 30 days to determine why and to look into possible measures that we can put in place to even improve further. Now there are 2 to 3 very critical motivations or reasons why these are sometimes happening. The first one would be that you would be aware of the fact that we work from the central database from National Treasury. So when we are receiving invoices, we verify the bank accounts details with those on the central database before we send that invoice through for payment. We do, however, experience on many occasions that the moment we process the payment on the system, that on the side of the Reserve Bank, the payment would be rejected, with the reason being wrong banking details. And that is a matter that we've experienced on quite a number of occasions. That would then require from us to get the correct banking details, again from the service provider, to reload that on the system, to get the verification that it is correct, and then only to make a follow-up payment based on the invoice that we received. So it is a lengthy process. It goes through the Reserve Bank for verification, and then only we can make the payment. So some of these, where we do not succeed in making a payment within 30 days, some of them are as a result of the fact that we have this problem of banking data not always correct. We also experience in a few cases that our managers who is supposed to sign up on invoices are across the country busy with monitoring visits, for example. That creates some delay in some of the payments going through because they cannot verify and sign up on the service delivered, so that we have accuracy in terms of our payments. It is minimal, and we are dealing with that matter specifically to ensure that we follow up, and when necessary, that it goes to the next level of management to sign off, so that we can process those payments and do not experience delays. Jay, in terms of those, I think those are the major issues. With regard to the HR litigations and the cost thereof, I can unfortunately not give you a direct cost or an amount linked to that. It is not major, however, I think it's rather the whole litigation process and those that are critical of nature. And I think when Ms. Marchetti deals with the vacancies and the disciplinary action, and the risk of litigations, I think she will address that matter of litigations specifically. Chief, I think perhaps we ask Mr. Kearns just to quickly deal with his part, and then in terms of specifically the issues around the travel agent, and also some additional information on 30 days and measures that we are putting in place to manage that even further, and maybe thereafter over to Ms. Hoffman. Thank you, Jeff.
What you said?
Thank you, Honourable Chair and members. Yeah, maybe just to supplement on what CFO had alluded to. Let me start off with the late payments to supplement on that. In fact, if I look at the cases for the last July of those 12 cases, they've really improved. And if I look at the amount that is attached to it, it is even a smaller percentage that's going through. But I think the important thing is that I wanted to stress is what are we doing about this, and especially from a technical perspective, it's very difficult to do any amendments in terms of the CSD of Treasury. Well, I serve on the Committee of Treasury, where we're dealing with the Central Supplier Database to see how we can beef up the system, especially from a supplier perspective, to ensure that when the information is either outdated or expired, it is much easier for them to update it. as it pertains to this type of invoices by managers, we have just in fact in this week released our computerized system, which is an invoice tracking system, and that will considerably improve the processing length, where now when the invoices are released it will be electronic, and then this immediate project manager will then electronically sign off on these documents. The system is designed in a way which programs, for example, if you the project manager has got 3 days to sign off and there's no reaction, it automatically escalates it and it gives feedback. So in this week we have released that system, so most of the managers will probably see it also coming through to them. That's the one, I think, real win that we have to make sure that there are no delays for our managers. Thus far, in any case, for any delay of payment, the relevant project manager has always been requested to provide written explanation why there have been delays. As it pertains to the travel, CFO is 100% correct, but even there we have now, it's not as advanced as with the invoice tracking, but we have commenced also the process that we can also do our booking electronically. It will not only ensure a much more efficient process, but as it becomes in terms of supporting documents submission thereof, it will also now be a computerized system, and I think that will immensely improve the turnaround time in terms of payment for traveling. I have a standing meeting with our travel agent on a monthly basis now to deal with it, and in that meeting serves also the head of finance, the CFO of the travel agent, that we deal now with these matters in addition to what we already have. That's what I'd just like to add, Jay. Thanks.
By the way, what's your role and your name?
I'm sorry, Jay. I'm Chief Director of Supply Chain Management.
Thank you very much. Any other response?
Thank you. Good morning. I'm responsible for business management. Just want to clarify the same questions that were raised, starting with and thinking of the standard number 18 is all about. But let's get me started by indicating the percentage in terms of the vacancy rate for the first or for the previous financial year, it was only 45%. That was in the previous financial year when we closed the books. But at the end of June, this financial year, we were at 5.2, which meant that during the first quarter of the financial year, we only managed to fill 1.3% of the vacancy. But then if I were to clarify it at slide number 18, we actually consolidated all the vacancies in the department, not necessarily the actual vacancies, and I'm also picking it up now that perhaps we should have unpacked this line in terms of indicating what exactly is this slide meaning, because it also talks to the projected forms for vacancies to be or post be vacated until the end of financial year 2019. So we look at the projected retirement within the department. So the number may look as big as in 2,174, but it also includes those that are still employed at the moment that will be vacated because of retirement at the end of 2019 March. In future, we will separate those so that we actually focus and target on the actual vacancy. In terms of the plans or strategies to make sure that these vacancies do not become this much, and when you look at the number of vacancies in the Chibet College, 1,888, that is where majority, because that is where almost 30,000 of the employees belong. And majority of them is those who will be retired, and like I'm saying, we'll have to unpack that so that you can see the number. But and those numbers, the level of those posts are delegated to the principals, and the reason why we had to come up with the plan
is because we are monitoring on a quarterly basis progress in terms of seeing the both patients as well as principals in terms of their delegations. Now, if any as meet or the meet fiduciary, the previous fiduciary, both on salary level 9 and above were delegated to the director general, and we got approval to lower those delegations as the plan was indicating there. It only started in the previous financial year around June, where the minister approved the delegation for salary level 9 to 12 deputy director general comprehensive staff, because that is where the majority of the vacancies existed. Salary level 18 and above is not much, and that is still delegated to the director general. And now the other strategy that we used, when we advertise the post on salary level 2 to 9 mostly, in the department we don't get any less than 66,000 applications on an average. Because of the capacity challenges in the department, we are using the services of the external service provider to capture those applications, and that has yielded a positive outcome, because if you compare the vacancy rate that we had in the previous financial year, it was taking longer than we wanted to. But even that one strategy, we know that it's actually not actually yielding the very outcome that we want. We are in the advanced stage of engaging CETA to develop the e-recruitment system. We already have a proposal, we just been trying to adjust it here and there in terms of reaching our requirements, and we are hoping that perhaps for the end of this financial year we will manage to utilize the e-recruitment system, because it will actually take away the amount of time it takes for us to capture what the system can do for us, so that as soon as the closing date arises, we just begin with the process of recruitment. I'm not actually taking away what the routine GG was talking about in terms of not getting the suitable candidates, but that is just on a lighter note, because it's not the majority of folks that are affected by that. I think that is what I needed to clarify when it comes to the vacancies and filling of vacant positions. Chairperson, I'm not sure in terms of the litigation, because from where I'm speaking, I wouldn't call them litigation if it's examination cases. We are dealing with examination cases. We have a challenge in terms of meeting the time frame of resolving 100% of the cases within 90 days. And that has already also improved, because we increased capacity in our regional offices, where we didn't have any representatives, and all the cases were resolved or dealt with by head office only. In the previous financial year, we managed to appoint resources within the regional office, and the turnaround time there has reduced drastically. I think that is what I can say so far.
Thank you.
Thank you, Chair. Honourable members, my name is Lefty Bach, Chief Director for TBS Financial Plan. The input I'd like to provide is on the TBS Capital Infrastructure Efficiency Grant. The question asked here is the 20.2% expenses. The primary reason, as indicated in the presentation, is the delay in the capital efficiency grant payments that were scheduled for quarter one. The reason being, as indicated, it was brand new funding we received, so we have no plans in place. It emanated from the presidential announcement of December 2017. Therefore, we had to design an expenditure maintenance framework. And the maintenance framework check is at every TVET college, there is now a costed maintenance framework for current infrastructure. And that took long to develop. Remember, it was new funding, so we never had plans to work on. So we have to create these plans. Then secondly is that these funds are going to be used for repairs and maintenance only for current infrastructure. We're not going to use it yet for student residences.
we might only consider that in year 2 or year 3, once you've taken care of the backlog of the current repairs and maintenance. Due to the fact that we had a hedge fund, there's a massive backlog. I mean, repairs and maintenance was current infrastructure. We go to the Tibet College and still note that. But what the department has been doing is we had to create a framework before we allocate the funds for the colleges to spend. I don't think it's wise to spend the funds if you don't have a maintenance framework. The maintenance framework said not to go into detail, but it's there's conditions attached to the funding. The TV colleges cannot spend the funds without the approval of the department. We will quality assure, we call it work packages. So a college will approach us and say they want to do A, B, and C of the funds. We send experts in to say whether or not we agree. If we agree that that's the funds where it should be used, we will approve the work package. They will then spend according to that approval. So to say that the department has got these processes in place to make sure that the funds are appropriately spent, that's on the capital and efficiency grant that I just want to give feedback to. Thank you, Chair.
I
I saw that the initial food fund and very little was spent on it. What are the challenges that what we're doing is related to the only side number three? Because I know that the food fund is one of the very important funds that we have. And I saw that it's 4.15% of the state to them. I know that they also there are issues of them reporting and all the language are in the first court. I usually the counsel I know, but I'm just interested to know why so little is it because they don't report, they didn't report or something, they told you to
appreciate.
Thank you.
I remember Joanna.
Chair, I think the official of not in agreement and someone who not in making this very advanced point about unemployed if wanting to get in at all costs. Not understanding their lack of qualification. The other side of the coin that the official is not in agreement is the extent to which our universities are giving our people benefits required in the economy and in society. A host of unemployed graduates both from students and universities are going to have our debt. And they are part of the unemployed statistics. And when Congress Martin takes this point to not in agreement, does that not say to you that you must create a new region together with the university, relook at the curriculum, relook at that is provided to you, relook at the socio-economic needs of our country. So that you train, you educate and train people that are relevant to the decades that are lying everywhere else. I often look at 10 years 24 which I in my in social classes. And every time I see thousands of jobs, all of them, literally all of them, require a skill. Go to Careers 24 today and you will see what I'm talking about. And it raises this question, what are universities educating and training our young people? If day in and day out, careers that require very specific skills. Because those people at the time response are very specific on what they want. They can't find them. What are you training these people? Now, how are you doing? So you're not in agreement. Right? It's a valid point that comes back to the very I find it strange that you also so agree. As if that absolves yourself as a department from stealing our people from us. It doesn't. This government party is alerting you to the problem that you are not aware of. I want to link this to the issue of the community education and training colleges, where you have not, according to what the first quarter says, you have underspent by 31.1 million, and this is attributed to the not fully on second point for these colleges. And I'm asking myself whether you can't use the free time to retrain these unemployed youth so that they are employed in these colleges. There's also a number of unemployed qualified teachers. Is it not possible for you to step into the budget of the teachers and ask them to sharpen the business they are asking so that they become relevant to the community college? So that you solve the problem of back and forth and contribute to solving the problem of unemployment, particularly for young graduates sitting at home, young educators unemployed. Look at your budget, look at your status, and deal with this problem. It's not going to help us if people say there are no 9.6 unemployed young people in South Africa. And this is a nice thing to say. Yet, not only yourself as higher education have vacancies, a whole lot of other institutions have vacancies. I referred you to News 24, which is a private sector thing, available for you. So South Africa is not short of jobs. Certainly not. South Africa is running short of relevant skills. And you have been charge of a number of skills development institutions, CITAS and other things, and so on and so on. And they are not making use of those to target these people at all. The other question which I put in, on slide 19, again on the question of processing applications, you have missed the back target in terms of the step mark limit. You pledged between 2030 vacant positions in the first quarter. Or in the third quarter, okay. Yes, in the third quarter. Hopefully you are on target. Tell us, indicate to us just how far you are with that quarter, so that in the third quarter, you come back and tell us that you're still in your school. But secondly, things to that. I see you have appointed an external provider. You have not said to us how much have you budgeted for that external provider to assist you in filling these courses. So, give us that information as well. But it leads to another question, Chairperson. If you have to employ the external service provider, it raises the question of your own capacity in your human resource section to deal with issues of filling your books. But to the extent that you are now looking for a service provider, do you have that capacity? Because if you go to the external service provider, you will have to find the budget for it. But it also means, to an extent, downpacking, because you have internal human resource, which is supposed to do that job. It's not delivering on that, now you are forced to look for a second service provider. So explain that to us and the budget and money is involved in our work. The last it's not here in the report, but I do want to ask this question whether you do have co-ops. And if you do, how much do they amount to and what impact those co-ops have on your 2018-19 financial year budget? The earlier on the CFO alluded to an amount of money, I cannot recall how many millions, that remains in your department after the transfers, the subsidies, 379 million. And the approvals if you have to transfer the approval and subsidies and tell us how much remains in within the department and how much for yourself, rather than what number, how much have you spent as a department on that remaining amount of money in the first quarter?
I mean, if you talk about this one, we are correct. See, we now consider the first quarter expenditure report. I want you to give us a correct figure of how much have you spent of this, how much are correct of this amount are correct. Because that will give us a correct figure of how much have you spent without outside the accrual? Or when we subtract the accrual? Because the accrual subtract is not an expenditure. That's a deviation. So, I'm going to have to put myself, of the first quarter expenditure, how much of it are accrual, so that we can get the exact expenditure for the outside.
Okay. I know you wanted to comment. Okay. Chair, very briefly. I'm aware that we have officials who are very qualified in their respective fields in education. I would like to take a slightly different angle from my colleagues in regard to education in general. I'll try to be as brief as possible. I have two children while at university at present. I never had any influence as to what they are going to study at university. The decision that they took for themselves. They are in education now. One is studying architecture, the other is doing a master's in economics. I'm a lawyer by profession, I didn't influence anyone, but it's a choice that they make. Perhaps in that instance, they were also fortunate at the school that they went to. There was something called career guidance. So they were able to find interest in one part of the other. The challenge that I see in our education, or education system today, is that there is a general perception that to be so-called educated, you need a university degree. Technical colleges that provide quite a number of life skills, well-paying jobs, your electrician, your plumber, your welders, they are not seen as status professors, as it were. So you find that quite a number of people who could do very well in the technical field end up where they are not good. So when it comes to universities, you also find that because of pressures, societal or peer pressure, I want to go to a university to get any degree in order to be regarded as one of those people who are educated. I have completely nothing against religious studies. But on every other corner today, you find somebody claiming to be a bishop. So if you have studied religious, biblical studies at university, the chances are that there's a very stiff competition that you're going to get. But the issue that I'm making is that it's a general perception in society who is educated and what. But the skills that we need as South Africans, we have to speak to what skills do we need in the country and what direction are people studying towards. By the time they get to university, they've decided what they want to study. It's not a function of tutors, lecturers at university. They can teach the classes that they have, that people have registered for, and people qualify in those respective fields. Whether those people will get jobs at the end of their degree is a function of the choices that they made as to what they are going to study and the availability of jobs. I would find it very difficult for university lecturers, teachers to force a person in a particular stream of education. It's a choice that you make. So that's also something that we have to grapple with. What are the needs of the country and what's the direction that people are studying? So that's a function of career guidance at schools and also at universities and at this level. But I would feel uncomfortable to blame people in higher education and say that, what are you doing about this? They are doing the job there, but we also have to take cognizance of the greater reality and needs of society and the perceptions that we have in society. Thanks.
All right. Thanks for comments.
Mm-hmm.
For my son, I'd like the internal auditor to share us his view on how does he feel about the 2 billion annual expenditure and what is he going to do to try and ensure that there is no annual expenditure, because whether we want or not, this is a compliance matter. And I'm saying it's a compliance matter, but also to remind you that you must remember that in terms of the amendment to the National Public Audit Act, people are going to change gears. And there's a new legislation in place which says you've got to tighten your belt, you've got to adjust, make adjustments. Before this one, you become an example of this adoption for the Auditor General. But we don't have a choice. I think the main aim here was to make sure that people carry out their duties but within the parameters of the law. I think that was the main aim here. The Auditor General's power has been made binding, yeah, in terms of recommendations, but also the remedial action. I think we must do whatever, we must also take this into consideration, so that there's no over and there's no under. I don't know, Doctor, what are you going to do about it? We have already told us that we have projected 150 million.
how you're going to, unless you have a discussion prior to the Auditor General, and make the Auditor General clear that you can let the Auditor General advise you. Otherwise, any over and under the November, in terms of the DMMA, there's no other way, it's an offense. So, I think the menu is looking ahead. So if you can find a way of discussing this with the Auditor General, so that you have an understanding of what is happening before the radio elections on your video video, Dr. As you understand, Madam Lady, that is why your good intentions are for as long as there will be a 150 million over expenditure to ask a determination. And unfortunately, we cannot do otherwise, and we can't compromise. All of us should insist that things are done within the parameters of the deviation. These deviations are not functional. And we're trying to work hard to make sure that the impact between us and the community that we're representing. The more we respect our own law, the more they will also respect us, and they will also learn from us. You know? Because we will then be leading by example, and they will also realize the importance of respecting the law. Okay? Now, that's the internal auditor. And then, the internal auditor, I'm sure the one who will then respond on the approval outside this question. But then the annual one, how much of this first quarter expenditure money that has gone into the accrual? But also the accruals to us, the rock this financial year of this financial year's operational costs. So what are you going to do about it? Because we should not go on with the accruals as if it's something that's not good. It's unacceptable. Oh, sorry, this one is not the internal Dr. Kinzo. Where you spoke about budget cuts, I heard you spoke passionately about budget cuts, which has, the budget cuts have impacted negatively on your baseline, your operational baseline, okay? Now, I'm sure we all understand what informed budget cuts. It was under expenditure. Yes. Whatever was under expenditure, they took the, I promise you, all the budget cuts were informed by under expenditure. Which is what then informed this committee to say, no, we should show zero tolerance from the first quarter because this thing has got an impact at the end of the financial year. It will continue again this year if you don't spend. It will continue. So you must find a way of spending. Because if you don't spend at the end of the financial year, the budget principles are saying national treasury, because national treasury is desperate to find money. For other key programs, there will be budget cuts. And then our endeavor also, how are you going to catch up? If you don't make it in the first quarter, the chances of you catching up, you might not catch up and end up with an under expenditure at the end of the budget, because it might impact on your end of the financial year budget expenditure. And then at the end, you experience another budget cut. And none of these departments, programs, they're complaining about the budget cut. But we now know what informs the budget cut. Also on the infrastructure grant. So if you don't, I promise you, I have a practical experience there. If you don't use your infrastructure grant, come end of the financial aid, it will be taken somewhere else. It will be taken by National Treasury. So that's why we must try and apply, it's called fiscal discipline. Yeah? So we've got to do that. That's why we've called you, because we put on the mind, we're looking at how has the pilot cut impacted on all the departments. So it means then you have to be very, very strict with your expenditure from the very beginning of the financial year. Because also at the beginning of the financial year, you have a plan. Your plan does not only start at the beginning of the financial year, let's be honest. Remember, it follows on your MTEF. So therefore you can't say you didn't have a plan so you could not implement, because it is an outer year which you would have known at when you were doing your strat plan about. So that you just strengthen those points that need to be strengthened in your outer year. So it all talks to planning. We have a plan. And Dr. Parker, you have correctly said that you have an infrastructure plan, an MTEF infrastructure plan. You can say that. Now, the follow-up question on the topic, your infrastructure plan. With regard to that, do you have the procurement plan? Because that's also where we have found that there are delays in the implementation. Procurement plan, which must be submitted on time to National Treasury. Because National Treasury is to try and make sure that it is delivered. Has come up with an innovative way and has requested the department to submit the procurement plan, so that indeed there's no delay also on the procurement. Those delays end up with under expenditure or over expenditure. But also to check with you if your procurement plan or your infrastructure plan are inclusive of maintenance plans. I've heard about this from your input on the TVET coalition. But also if those plans are delayed, probably should come end of, you have said there's money available, eh? Come end of the financial year, you're going to lose that money. Something else to say something else to run and hit the ground running, because there's money, and if I don't use it, I'm going to lose it. So you respond then on the procurement plans, right? And then yes, there's another question that I want to ask. From the audit committee, can you also explain how your view on the operational budget that we have, and how it's been monitored to make sure that it's come end of the financial year, because we see our end of year over and under, but also value for money. You know, just to check if what is your where I have spoken about cash flow projection, it was on the, I think it's infrastructure grant implementation. Okay? No, implementation transfer, yes. Yes, transfer. Your cash flow projection and the schedule. If we can get it, because you said you want to do that to monitor your financial statement. So it's the transfer, it's cash flow, schedule, or transfer. What did I say? Did I say transfer or payment schedule? I know I'm still cash flow projection. So now I wanted to put that, because probably this is about cash flow projection. What cash flow have you projected, you know? So that's fine. So I think that's it, infrastructure, isn't it, okay? Then we explained that we cannot cut or embark on cost procurement on traveling and accommodation, because those are the cost drivers. I know that there's this thing called Ninja 2. I'm sure you can use it, the new model to
to check with you on when we can cut the fees on sort by certain people or sort by medical
covers all the skills that we believe are required for the country.
it's not an exact science, but it's been working now since the early 2000s, and we are able to, in that way, steer the system in terms of the development of relevant skills. Of course, the issue of ensuring we have relevant curriculum and responsive curriculum is an important one, and we have programs that we will work with universities to ensure we have updated curricula. The issue around career development, we think, is a very, very important issue for the system as a whole, that young people get the right advice, because some of the data does show that often the young people who drop out of, for example, the university system or the TVET system are young people who haven't had the right career advice early on. And then they go into things that aren't actually what they would like to do. And so the department, to our planning branch, has a whole section that focuses on career development services. And there they are, there's a call center that supports people from across the system in terms of getting career advice and career development. I think it's one of these areas that's very important. We've also done a major research through the HSRC, the Labour Marketing Intelligence Program, which was all about trying to understand what are the signals from the supply-demand side in the system to help us in terms of our enrollment planning processes. But what the data shows, and perhaps my colleague from DEC Skills can give the exact data, it shows that for university graduates, around, I think the last quarter was 6.9% that were unemployed of university graduates. Now that's up from the last quarter of last year, down from the last quarter, but it jumps up and down between about 4.5% and so on. The TVET colleges are, for graduates from TVET colleges, it's a much higher unemployment rate, and they were looking at around about a 17% unemployment rate of graduates from TVET colleges. And that's the area, and Honourable Member mentioned the idea that we have to change the way people think about it, but we also have to change the curricular ready to be far more occupationally focused. And to develop the real kind of skills that we need in the system. And that's something that we're working on in terms of how we are changing what's happening in the TVET sector. We have started a program that's focused on developing centers of specialization, where we focus on specific skills, like electrical, or the plumbing, or whatever, and we then creating these centers of specialization. We're working very closely with our industry to create dual programs that will really focus on the world of work. And to look at the whole TVET system moving away from all of these general qualifications towards more of these kind of occupationally directed programs so that we can ensure that we have a better fit between those people that come into the TVET colleges and the world. And the world of work. I think the other issue I wanted to just quickly pick up on was the issue around the infrastructure. We do not, as a department, apart from the TVET College, the new campuses for the TVET College, we do not procure infrastructure ourselves. The procurement is happening at the level of the institution. In terms of their policy, what we have in the department is something called, for the university sector, something called the macro infrastructure framework. And what the macro infrastructure framework is it's a web-based system where we have policy, certain benchmarks that we expect institutions to adhere to in terms of policy development, in terms of implementation of procurement, in terms of their plans, and they report to us on a quarterly basis in terms of the rollout of the infrastructure plans that are approved by the minister and then we provide funds for. So the funding is transferred to institutions, and our payment schedule is around the transfer of funds to institutions. And for that reason, as long as we're getting the right reports from the institution, and we are monitoring what's happening at the institutional level, we will do the transfer, because those plans are all in place and the funds are committed in terms of the procurement process. So I think it's important to recognize that difference between being a department that directly manages those kinds of issues to being a department that's main focus is around the policy focus, and then putting in place regulatory processes and monitoring what is happening on the ground. We do have a team that visits every institution twice a year now, and we get the quarterly reports from them. And we also have a development support program that the team is putting in place for those institutions that have difficulties in terms of some of the issues around procurement. I think Mr. Gillet can pick up on the TVET issues in terms of the TVET infrastructure. And I thought we'd just hand over to my colleague, Zimbardo, to just update on the skills side before we continue with the other colleagues.
Thank you. In terms of the TVET infrastructure, yes, as the acting DG has indicated, the infrastructure, the 1.3 billion, it's allocated as a subsidy, it's part of our subsidy allocation. Now, my previous communication indicated that we are working on a maintenance framework. Now, what that entails is that colleges submit a fully costed maintenance plan, which is now due in October. You indicated to me that we should be able to transfer the funds, otherwise we'll lose that, right? Now these infrastructure, these costed maintenance plans will tell us what are the infrastructure requirements, repairs and maintenance, not capital infrastructure, but repairs and maintenance for a particular college for the year. Now let's say we've got 1.3 billion, over 50 colleges, it's about 37 million each. The costed maintenance plan might be 50 million. So the costed maintenance plan will inform where the funds will be allocated. Again, Jay, those funds are conditional allocation, so it's a ring-fence allocation. So the transfers will be made before end of the year for every college based on the maintenance plan. It will be allocated to a dedicated bank account, which we monitor. The funds will not necessarily be spent by year end, but it will be transferred to those accounts and ring-fence at earmark. Therefore, we will not have an under-expense in our accounts, but the funds will be in dedicated accounts because, like I've indicated, they will spend according to those packages that we're going to approve. So it's not that the 1.3 billion will be fully expended by the 50 colleges by March. That's not possible. We need to make sure we've got value for money and that the funds are appropriately utilized for the intended use. So that's the plan that we're working on, Jay. So the funds will definitely be transferred, but it will be spent based on the work packages approved by the department. And as indicated, when the backlog has been addressed, if all the roofs have been painted, if all the ablution facilities were upgraded, when all the backlog has been done, we can then consider utilization of funds for student residences. But as it stands now, we never have any funds in the system. We have to resolve the repairs and maintenance. Thereafter, we can look at further expansion in terms of capital infrastructure.
I fully agree with you. Some of them went to gain. So please, if you can make a turnaround for the environment, the quality, whatever skill that you want to
Okay. Thanks very much, Chairperson, honorable members, Director General and colleagues.
Well, Dr. Parker just alluded in a very important area with regards to the unemployment rate. And I think that has been consistent, right, to if we look into the quota labor force survey, that university graduates are the ones unemployment is quite very low. In fact, there's growth from the first quarter of 2018 to the second quarter of 2018. From 7.9% to 6.9%. So it tells us therefore that those who go into all universities are not trying to be easily absorbed by the industry. And then obviously the other tertiary qualifications which have been put in our TVET, and that was at 16.6. I know obviously there's been an increase in that area in unemployment. Those with matric are at about 28% unemployment rate, and those with no matric at more than 31%. So it tells us therefore that the work of our universities has for that much contribution to the economy of the country. I must also indicate something. In 2015, we discovered in our work of LMIP that mostly about 40% of our science graduates and 31% of engineering graduates will get it under the financial services sector. Something that is an anomaly, that you are going to get about 31% of engineering, of your engineering graduates being in the financial sector, 40% science graduates being in the financial service sector. But then obviously, you know, even in those sectors, you may require engineers because of the skills that they are bringing. There is that portability element with regard to them because they are from the area of STEM, your science, technology, engineering, mathematics. So that is why they can easily be absorbed by the financial service sector. And honorable members will be aware that if you look into gross domestic products, the financial service sector is one of the areas of the economy that has been doing the bit well, not going into contraction or going into, if one were to say, technical recession, as we know that the economy is at minus 0.7 as we speak in the second quarter of 2018, and then it was at minus 2.2 in the first quarter of 2018. So telling us therefore that the economy is on technical recession, if one were to use those concepts. You know, there is something also interesting if you look into the world, if you say it's a mismatch whereby we're having the right way to start in that particular area and then they find employment in a particular area. And the closer mismatch that you could get was on those who start in business and commerce. For 20% of them will get them in the financial services sector. So meaning which therefore they are closely fitting with what they started with the way in our universities. Interesting because whether you look into your TVET graduates as well as you look into your university graduates, trends are the same. In 2015, 72,000 of the TVET graduates were in the financial services sector, and 70,000 will get them in the manufacturing sector. If you look into the university graduates, 37,000 of them that were in the labor market at the time were in the financial service sector, and 27,000 of them were in the manufacturing. One would say manufacturing and construction should be leading, especially if you look into these graduates with engineering qualifications. Also, I just want to come to another area of academic development. It's an area that we been improving in terms of producing of artisans in the country. If I look in the past 2 years or so, including this financial year, and you'll see that those targets that we have set for ourselves were meeting them. In 2017, our target was 21,110, so what we have achieved, that was 21,188. And also in the one that we will be presenting later in my report, and you'll find that artisan targets were meeting them. And then you look at them even in those type of trades. Those are the trades that are required by the economy, whether in terms of the new growth path, in terms of the industrial association plan, in terms of the national development plan, and the like. And importantly, another area also I want to allude to is what is that, because this is in the main, in the area of citrus. In 1617,
for workplace-based learning opportunities. We have a target of 120,000. We have achieved that target by 148,517. So there is improving your learnerships in the main, the internships, and video studies that have been conducted are telling us that those who have participated in learnerships, about 80% of them are absorbed by the industry. So that is why, therefore, and there is that call that as you are going also to the job summit, that you need to scale learnerships in particular, as well as artisanal programs. So I just wanted to share some of those few figures so that at least there is something positive that is being done and the economy is responding to an extent. But then of course we must take into account that the economy is in contraction itself. So it will have impact into the learners or graduates that we do produce in the post school education and training system. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank
you.
Thank you, Dr. Falker. Honourable Chairperson, honourable members, just five things that I would like to indicate to you. Number one is, with regard to the accrual matter, let me start off by indicating that for the year 2017-18, the past financial year, of our total allocation of 68.6 billion rand for that year, our accruals were mainly for areas around travel accounts, specific examinated and moderated claims for travel, as well as examinated and moderated remuneration claims, and also a portion for community education and training educators that claimed their fees. That in total was as little as 53 million if you compare it to our total allocation of 68 billion. Up to the end of June for this year, that full 53 million is part of the expenditure that went through, as we indicated on the slides, and you will note that the 53 million, if you compare to the total expenditure for the first quarter, is way above 32.7 billion. It is included in that total amount, which is less than 0.1% of the total spend. Now, if one look at cost containment and the matters raised by the committee, which we appreciate, I can indicate to you that the budget cuts implemented on the side of the Department of Higher Education and Training was not as a result of underspending. The budget cuts that we absorbed was part of the normal cost reduction cuts across the whole of government by National Treasury. For example, if we look at our underspending during the 2017-18 financial year, and that is the trend since the establishment of the department, our underspending, if one look at our total allocation of more than 60 billion, 64 billion for that year, was only 12 million rand, which is a 0.001% of the total allocation. We do not, as a department, have a history of poor spending. That I can acknowledge. We must also indicate that the measures that we implement was not only to absorb the severe cuts across government and even within the department, but also to ensure that we have more efficient and more economical expenditure of our resources. The department does not have a lot of money to throw around. We cannot waste our money. There is a lot of services to be delivered within our service delivery branches. and we need to be strict, and we need to ensure that everybody can perform the activities that they are supposed to perform in order to meet their targets for the year. Chair, then, in terms of this, I must also indicate that we have, and we included some of the information also in the narrative report that was submitted to the committee. We have a serious level of expenditure monitoring within the department. We do not only rely on our monthly reports in terms of the PFMA to the Director General as the accounting officer and to the minister as the executive officer. We also have regular, more regular reports that we look at to ensure that our expenditure is on track and that we do not overspend. And that is the most critical part of it. We also ensure that our branch heads receive at least for the first 9 to 10 months monthly reports so that they from their side can also plan thoroughly. In the last 2 to 3 months of the financial year, we change our monitoring depending on the status of our expenditure to approximately weekly and, if required, daily. During the last financial year, since around the second week of February, we had daily reports that we monitored to ensure that we remain within our allocation and to apply certain measures to ensure that we do not overspend. That is one of the reasons, because of additional cost containment and additional monitoring, that we underspent by 12 million rand at the end of that year. Otherwise, we might have overspent. But we had to apply strict measures to ensure that we remain within our budget, and as the PFMA require, not only for the budget as a whole, but for each program in the budget. If one looked in at this, it assists us to ensure that our spending trends remain within our cash flow forecasts. Yes, we do underspend, but as indicated in the presentation for the first quarter, there were thorough reasons for those, and we prevented a situation of fiscal dumping by simply transferring funds to institutions, but to have sound reasons and motivations for those transfers before they are made. And most of those transfers, which one can almost say that were withheld during the first quarter, those were made subject to conditions being met during July and August up to date. If we look at the shortfall that we estimate, and as you rightfully indicate, we must adhere to the restrictions in the PFMA and the Treasury regulations, and we indeed do. The amount of 150 million that we estimate that our examination services may overspend for the financial year, we already are in discussions with National Treasury. There's already been written communication between us, and the purpose of that is to ensure that we shift months of funds within the available resources to accommodate that possible underspending on the examination services and to manage that accordingly. It is not to get additional resources, and we will not allow a situation that we overspend. I think we need to be clear about that. We will not allow that. It is not allowed in terms of the PFMA, and we will put measures in place to ensure that it is not happening. See, lastly, just to confirm, you did raise, which is extremely important, the matters around procurement plans. Procurement plans are in place. It's been submitted to National Treasury as required. It is monitored on a quarterly basis, and where there are deviations, it is reported to National Treasury as required, and alternative measures are put in place to ensure that we remain within what we planned and that everything is spent at the end of the day. We also included the table within the narrative report on the SEM process regarding the procurement plans and the monitoring thereof. And lastly, Chair, perhaps just also to indicate that as part of all this monitoring processes, the department has implemented a compliance unit under the office of the CFO. This unit is also assisting to ensure that we comply and to ensure that all processes that are required are being met, especially in terms of the BFMA and the Treasury regulations, so that they can not only monitor the department but also the CFO and the accounting officer to ensure that everything we do is in compliance and that we do not overspend and that we utilize our resources as they were planned. So, Chair, I'll stop there for now. Thank you, Chair.
I'm waiting for other responses.
Monitors that any environment between budget items, which are allowed in terms of the public finance management act remains within that 8% to ensure that we do not get an overexpenditure on the main division within a cut, which then of course results in unauthorized expenditure. I just want to see if I've missed one of your questions, Chair. I do think I've answered the questions that you've raised, unless there is something that I've read and missed. Chair. Thank you very much.
Engaged. The second challenge is that majority of folks that were dealing with SNP, the ones that are delegating to SNP, involve colleges. You advertise the post of a principal, the district principal, assistant director in a college, you are bound to recruit someone from internal. Now, when you appoint a person in a vacant position, you are creating another vacant. So there is a moving, it's a rolling stone that it never comes to an end. You will never ever say, I've exhausted all the posts that are actually vacant in the department. So that's how the system is actually a moving. So if you've got 10 vacancies, almost 99% of those vacancies are going to be filled from within. Now, administratively, you are creating another vacancy. But another strategy that I also didn't mention was that a public service regulation allows us on those lower level positions, and that is the area where we normally get more applications. We are allowed to utilize the pool of the previously advertised applications. And in that case, we are able to make our turnaround time quicker because you have already captured those applications because the most of the time it takes 10 days. So we go back to the pool and do the short listing and run through the normal processes. The only thing that we can't is that we don't go out to advertise. But those are only for generic posts. If it's a post of a cleaner or any post that can a profile fit, we go back to the pool. But you can't do that on professional or specialized posts because you really need to go outside, especially your salary level 9 and above. Chairperson, I think what I can also indicate to this committee is that we are reporting to this committee today for the first time, and I think by being here, it actually gave us an idea of what are the expectations in terms of how we will report, what is expected, because I could see from the questions that are being raised. Responses are there, it's just that the manner in which we compiled our presentation, it limited the committee to understand exactly what is happening, but I just made some point to say, we really need to be reporting. If we talk about understanding, we need to indicate that someone is going to put up the intention of every report now, how far this is going. And I think from this meeting today, it came to my mind that we really need to unpack and be thorough in terms of reporting so that the information can be clear. There was another question in terms of whether there was budget to recruit or to remain the service provider, in which we did because we realized that we're not winning in terms of capturing the salary. So as a volume we're putting up our budget allocation, we have budgeted 800,000. So far we used 466,000 to pay the service provider. And the other remaining amount is going to be used now because we are consolidating another asset in line with our recruitment plan, and probably the asset will be going out towards the end of September or just before the end of September. Yeah, I think that is what I needed to add to issues relating to innovation.
Thank you very much. I think we've covered as much of the answers as we would, and thank you for the opportunity to give the response.
I'm trying to check if you responded to all the questions that seem to come to mind. The one on the debate, the use of certificates for people to go out and look for employment. And then the last time on the chairperson of the Proposal for Education, this data is back to 2007, and indeed it has created more new rules. Thank you. image and meta, that needs your attention. I'm trying to talk about that. The people tend to be doing, you know, which means that the rest of us use the right way. You know, before you go, look at all the elements of your attention, and then for those that can be done when you are away, then delegate somebody to do it on your behalf. What is that meant to do? You need that initiation. I'm trying to talk about so I'm trying to say, so today the planning should not be used as far as we're concerned, they should start giving away people. And then also the decision making, I want to know what's your turnaround, sir? The gentleman responsible for maintenance said they will then submit their plan. And then, for the subsidy, application for the subsidy, and then only if they, you know, qualify for the subsidy. Now the turnaround ten in taking decision, my problem is today, because the delay is also in the, you know, in decision making. So the turnaround, the official turnaround there. And then also, you see, there's this thing, that's what you know. Do the Tibet colleges have the capacity to come up with credible plans to maintain the capacity? And if they don't have, because there's this, the risk of withholding the transfer, if they don't have, how are you supporting them? Because if you're a senior and then you're supporting them, so that the work is to wait until you qualify. But you might not qualify for that whole thing. Then the budget will be lost. Or probably it's with the budget that you have approved. And it just was to be done and work. And there's no, you know, doesn't make any sense. So it's also turn around to me. And then, okay. I know you touched on on the employment of graduates, yeah? To really set up, set aside that you offer to the skills of the day. But then what I want you to ask is as well, because you see when you speak, you should be able to speak with confidence and use force people, yeah? But not be dumb fucking information. Can you give us a breakdown of the employment of graduates?
Because if you follow the money, the one you follow to the last cent,
there's no way in which it matters what way. No one accounts for that money, and we don't know where it is and how it is being used. Our role is to make sure that every cent works for the purpose for which it was allocated. So we worry about that money. If you can assist us with, because we can develop a policy or regulation to get that money back so that it can be allocated for our work. Because we'd be sitting here with people having a lot of money that is not being used for the purpose for which it was budgeted. And to us, I think there's a room for corruption in there if it's not controlled. Yes? Control is to make sure that you avoid also such things, you know? More than that, control is very bad. But actually, the same thing from the previous financial year. They will end up being reserved. But who follows up on how are these reserves used moving forward? We're following the money. We really want to know what it has to the government. So we must find a way of either in the surrender act, and then you reallocate. It's better you have control over that than not to have control over that, and you don't know what that money is going to do. Especially because we still sit in the circle only for teachers. 21 teachers, but we still sit in the circle. Government has done everything in its power to try and close the gap, but it's not closing because I think the stakeholders are not sure that money. Alright, so maybe just three quickly and then we close.
Came in relation to the certification backlog. There were two backlogs. One was the National Certificate of Vocational Backlog, which is one referred to going back to 2007. That backlog has been addressed, so there's no outstanding backlog. There's another backlog that was also related to the Nation Certificate, which is back as far as 1991. That has been, that is an inherited so that the preliminary indications indicate that those certificates should be resolved within the next 1 or 2 years. So there should be no backlog. So that was the old backlog. But currently going forward now, all certificates are issued within a 3 month period after it has been resolved. So that has been resolved. So the latest certificate, the National Certificate of Vocational Backlog has been resolved. Later should be resolved in the next 1 or 2. And all the current people sitting for exams are certificated within 3 months of the crisis. And getting their results.
I included in that this description about what the problems at NSF were. So the reasons for the delay are multiple due to the challenges that were happening in relation to NSF. So on the one hand, it's about the individual signing the agreement forms, but on the other hand, it's this problem of the data integration between the NSF application and the institution's registration. So the funds are available for all the students. Funds have been transferred to institutions. Institutions are supporting students, but these things have to be dealt with and linked up. And that's the work that's currently being done as a matter of urgency under the administrator. The second one was in relation to the infrastructure plan. The delay wasn't caused by anything other than we have to be absolutely sure that these infrastructure programs that come from all the different institutions are credible programs. And they have to be, the infrastructure support team has to analyze all of those, ensure they're correct, go through our whole process and then make recommendations to the DG and to the minister, and the minister has to approve them. So it was the delay in the whole chain of events that resulted in this not happening in June as expected, but happening in early July. So from that perspective, I think it's exactly the same issue in the TPEC
sector in terms of finalizing the program. I will ask Mr. Kibbe to talk more about it, but in terms of our infrastructure and support program, we have a team linked to our NASA infrastructure framework that is assisting the TVEC branch in analyzing the maintenance plan and ensuring that those maintenance plans are payable. So that once those plans are in place, we will be able to ensure that we monitor them effectively. And that whole issue about ensuring that you have a plan in place, that the plan is improved, that funds are earmarked, that funds are put into earmarked accounts and cannot be used for anything else, and that we then monitor that process and progress is how we try to do this effectively. One understands that one wants to try and keep to the projections in terms of how those funds may be used, but the practical life experiences of real people doing work sometimes do cause a few delays. And I think that I think we can assure you that we are putting in place very strong monitoring processes, because we want that those funds to be valued for money, and we want to ensure the effective procurement processes are safe. And so that's the whole issue around that. I want to hand over to Mr. Jilek to carry on and just deal with the rest of the TV.
Thank you, Chair. Additional to what the acting DG indicated is that we've been running training the last 3 months at TVEC colleges. So we've been training all identified staff specializing in infrastructure. We've been training them on standards, how to maintain infrastructure. We also have another set of training linked to the CIDB, if you're quite familiar with CIDB requirements in terms of standards, in terms of building maintenance. So we are training staff as a process of the department. And then in terms of the turnaround times that we've asked for, we've got a deadline of end of October for the fully costed maintenance plans of all 50 branches. Now, we've received approximately, I would say, about 20 of them already, which we are working on as we speak, to be able to allocate work packages from those plans. So the deadline is October for the plan. In terms of our adjusted E&E process, the cash flow, the payments will be still made in December and in March next year to be able to transfer those funds in terms of the adjusted E&E process. Again, indicating these funds will be transferred to dedicated accounts and they cannot spend without our approval. So that is the indication in terms of how the funds will flow in terms of the AME process. So, saying again, October is the deadline for the cost of maintenance plans, and then we are also initiating more training exercises with the TVEC colleges. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you very much, Chairperson, I need maybe more or less 30 minutes to go through this report that you require now. If I am allowed to, I will start with the chairperson. I'm going to start the chairperson. No. What we can do, chairperson, is to provide the copy of the report. This report was produced in 2016, and that was the work between the Department, Human Rights Affairs Council, as well as with other universities, whereby we were to look as to how many, where are TVEC graduates, where are university graduates. So for example, in 2014, we found that in the labor market there is about 1.2 million a university graduates in the labor market in various areas. 1.8 for TVEC graduates in various areas of the labor market. So if you look into that report, it's about 3 million people where they're qualifying, as I say, in a single or in a university area. So it's a report I can also, if I we do have a specific list, then it's here, it's available right now as you speak. I think it will change. So it's a very important report, and I should think it's serving more than 100 pages, but I was willing to take a committee through because it's very important, especially as you have so indicated, etc.
We're not
scared
of reading. We dream over like over the 39 patterns. No, we're not scared of reading.
Yeah.
So we can teach what
to sacrifice
cost for what. But it's okay, please, for what? Yeah, for our future adjustment.
On the one, chapter with regard to special classes, that one is super regulated. I can tell you that we monitor quite very closely any surplus that is arising out of the sector. I can tell you in 2012 we produced grant regulations that came operational 1st April 2013. We had the regulations of regulation 312 and regulations of regulation 44. 312 was saying if the seeker is having funds that are uncommitted, those funds will be surrendered to National Affairs Fund. So we've been doing that for, I should think, about 3 years. And in the first year, the amount was very big, was quite very huge, and that was surrendered to NSF. And then as the years were going on, so it was going down. So it means therefore it was an incentive and that regulation. But we lost in a labor court, labor report, whereby they said you cannot surrender money extra to NSF because NSF is 20%, 80% going to SETA. So we should have not surrendered any extra money arising out of the SETA surpluses to NSF to be used for any other purposes. But then I must say that the surpluses are quickly regulated in terms of the federal regulation. So we are monitoring the SETA quite very closely.
All right, thank you very much. Following members, it does look like we've exhausted the discussion, am I right? We say almost. Thank you very much. I must say that it was a meaningful day. Well, honourable members, officials, for the department and indeed the mass comment
the
Please keep up with me. I didn't know that's how I know you need to keep up with my family. All right, I think, for instance, the other people are resolving the certificate deadline. Something for that. That's the legacy. So, what people don't realize is that whenever they're getting something, they must leave it away. So, which means your mind must be that legacy. For that reason, your mind is important. The processing of invoices, okay. Implementation of cost containment measures as per the instructions by National Treasury. So this is the invoice that we have. Indeed, we need to do more with this. You may have heard that the account is currently in a technical recession. Following a 0.7 decline in economic growth in the second quarter of 2018-19, we've heard that. Technical recession. Can you explain what technical recession is? But you know what the recession means? Everything shrinks. Even the fact that there's no air. So which means, and please don't use that as an excuse. Use the budget that you have in a manner that you still can use. But you have to apply some adjustment, some break, somewhere, and adjust. You can't go on as if you're not in a technical recession. One of the things that analysis means is follow adjustment. It's like when you are in the airplane, you say, hey, now there are clouds, and then you adjust. So all of us are in a technical and not to hem on. So the technical recession, so we did not do this. No, 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 that's the kind of thing. Leaders. Or to think creatively also in situations like this. So that's what we expect to do. Thank you very much. Having said that, under no circumstances must the department lose sight of the need of improved expenditure performance and more interested in this in the higher education and training. The committee encourages the department to improve in the following areas. Spending performance, the underspending is about 2 billion against the department's own projection. Huge and which is huge. And the committee rates this as a red flag, particularly for the much needed infrastructure maintenance and development. So yes. Considered a dire need. Our children are failing because of the environment that is not conducive for them to sleep and also to study in the stage. I mean, how do you become productive when you don't have a place to sleep and rest? Close, shut down so that the children are fresh and ready for the new, whatever lecture that you need. You know? So, please, let's. Can we abstract on this one? Can we improve on this one? Planning and budgeting, the late transfer of infrastructure grants, 1.2 billion, to invest in is a huge concern for this committee. I know that you're saying that it's not your fault, but we have to come up with measures to make sure that you put pressure on them so that you can transfer. Because if they don't transfer, you see written under expenditure. And we punish you for that. Or maybe we should have spoken more about compliance management. We should have not done. Yeah? You must apply compliance management. But anyway, if we haven't applied it, promise your age is coming to apply compliance management. So people better start correcting and to be conscious of the failures. Delayed 637 million capital grants to Tibet colleges is also another concern to this committee. You see, following the money, now we see that the money is not there. So that would be unacceptable. Increased access to higher education and training demands that government speed up the pace of building infrastructure facilities such as lecture halls and student accommodation. Then the other area of focus is filling of vacancies. 1,889 vacancies within the colleges. We talk to the department of training and retention strategy. What does that mean? Why such a big gap? And anyway, we can improve. I think there are no people to also give those lectures, you know, like you might even say 2 years of spending. Where could be 2 years of spending? Well, nothing is happening in the because there's no facility. You know? Well, the introduction of free higher education and training warrants that the department speeds up the capacity to meet increased demand. Fast tracking, speed up, speed up research, capacity. The MDP is clear on the need for building strong capacity as part of building a capable development system. So without this capacity, there's no development. So please help government. General treatment of TVET colleges. TVET colleges require the necessary attention. Currently, there are many challenges. High vacancy rate needs to be sorted, delay in capital grants for infrastructure, delays in issuing graduation certificates. Unfortunately, here we heard about the technical treatment. In closing, the committee will closely monitor the department's spending performance in forthcoming quarters. The committee accepts improvements and will not hesitate to invite the department if we do not see improvements. And that might be in the next quarter. And the next quarter is April, end of September. Remember, October 1st, so it might be a month's time. Now on the year transfer payment schedule, please send us the following information. Year transfer payment schedule, breakdown of graduate employment, etc. But here on the year transfer payment schedule, I think you know what's still very dramatic. We need your... cash flow. Because that one cannot last. Because when we know that this is what you said in this month, budget. And then we know that then the international will allocate you that. Yeah? And then if you don't use it, then you have an excess. You still have it. How are you going to, you know, find the balance in excess? Because then the next financial will give you another, you know, yeah, or another fund. So, but anyway, we did a good test. Thank you so much, FCDG, CFO, the CFO is much, and the internal audit, Professor May, the audit committee, everyone much, not very sharp, till you find yourself coming here in a month. Thank you so much. I think the engagement between ourselves. Then I don't know, panel members, do you want a 5 minute break or should we proceed? Because we're running 5 minutes, I don't know.
That's not yours, eh?